Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Collectors, it's the moment you've been waiting for. Today we welcome back our stamp and coin experts to take your questions. First, we welcome back David Tripp. He's the former director of Sotheby's Coin, Tapestry, and Musical Instrument Departments. He's author of Illegal Tender, Gold, Greed, and the Mystery of the Lost 1933 Double Eagle, as well as a fine art consultant and a cartoonist. Also joining us this afternoon, Bob Scott, our stamp expert and director of the Postage Stamp Department. Bonhams, is it? Bonhams?
Well, up until last year. But
So this is the old...
Formerly the director.
Well, he's done many things, and we'll discuss that coming up. David and Bob, welcome back to the show. Nice to have you guys here.
Wonderful to be here again.
Now, it's our first stamp and coin show in a while, so we expect the phone lines to be lighting up fast. Get in early, call early, call often, 1-800-348-2551. We'll only let you on the air once, but you can call as many times as you want, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org.
You really don't need us to be here at all.
The show's over now. So we're all done.
Isn't it time for the news?
Yes, it is. Exactly. It's time for the news. Well, guys, welcome back. And, you know, I saw a story and thought of you immediately a couple of weeks ago. These four Virginia siblings, they have this rare 5-cent piece, and they sell it, and they make $3.1 million. Nice. This is the story that all of us want.
A nickel to $3.2 million? Yeah. This is what you want.
Tell
all
us
the
about
time.
This.
Kind of a sad story there.
Well, for their father, it was a sad story.
It's a happy ending.
Very happy ending. Well, it's an interesting coin. It's the 1913 Liberty Head nickel. It was the last year the design appeared. Now, there's also, just for a little backstory, a lot of controversy as to whether the coin was legitimately made or was sort of made in after hours by some enterprising mint employees, which is part of the history of things. Five of them were made. They were first advertised, I think, in around 1924. They eventually were kept together, and there was a Colonel Green, Hetty Green's son.
Mm-hmm. Colonel Green.
Yeah.
Stamp collector.
He owned them all at one point, and after he died, they went to a fabulous collector in St. Louis who is still alive. Mm-hmm. And he bought them for $500.
Mm.
He has since sold them all. So he's 102 and out the money. But they eventually then spread around and went to various collectors. And they were bringing good money. King Farouk had one. His brought about $6,000 in 1954, which back then was a lot
good
of money.
Yeah.
Very good money. And they went to various places. And one of them went to this man called George Walton. And Mr. Walton was one of the great coin collectors, U.S. coin collectors around. And he had promised one day, I think this was 1962, to exhibit at a coin show down south. And he packed up his collection and he hit the road. And unfortunately, his car went off the road and Mr. Walton was killed.
Oh, boy.
And it was a tragedy, needless to say. And his children and his wife then took the collection, and they decided, well, it was Dad's collection. We don't really know or care about coins, so we're going to take it and sell it.
Yeah.
So they took it to one of the great auction houses in New York. This would have been about 1963, coin auction houses. And they looked at the collection, and they said, fabulous collection, but your 1913 nickel is a fake.
And why? Just because it was only known that there were four at the time?
There were only five total, and they're all from the same die, supposedly. But the experts at this auction house, which they're still in business, so we will remain nameless.
Okay, fair enough.
although the experts are long gone.
All right.
Looked at it and said, well, this just doesn't look like the real deal. And they had sold other ones, and they made the determination. So the family said, fine. They sold the rest of the collection, which did extremely well. They tossed the coin in a safe in the closet somewhere. 40 years later.
Or 50.
Well, 40 or 50 years later, there had been an advertisement from one of these coin houses that said, you know, we're going to give anybody who can find the fifth 1913 nickel, a genuine one, because they were known to exist.
Yeah. Were there fakes known to exist as well?
It's one of the most heavily faked coins in the world. We will get thousands of fake inquiries today for this one coin.
Okay.
Because you can actually change. Is it an 18 to a 13? No.
They change the two and they make it. They add numbers to the date.
I see.
Okay. So believe me, I've seen more fake 1913 nickels than.
Okay.
I could retire on them, to be honest with you. In any event, there was a reward given if you had a genuine one. And it was about 10 years ago now. So it was 40. Thank you, Bob.
My apologies.
Okay, we'll give it to you.
All right.
And they took it to the American Numismatic Association, which is the big convention every year. They showed it to one of the experts at, I think it was the Professional Coin Grading Association. They looked at it, and they said, you know, this looks kosher. And so they pulled over another expert, and they all started looking at it. And fortunately, the other ones were on exhibition there. And so they could line them all up. Boom, boom, boom. Same dies. It was.
Wow. And they're pretty sure of that?
And they were 100% sure of it. And then they asked the people, what's your name? And they said, oh, well, my father was George Walton. And suddenly all the little keys dropped into shape.
Wow.
It was genuine all along. And then the family didn't need the money at that point. And from good PR point of view, they loaned it to a museum in Colorado Springs where it was on exhibition for 10 years. And they finally decided this year to cash in.
3.1 mil, eh?
Ka-ching.
Yeah, cha-ching. That's a great coin story. Now, the stamp story that I found interesting involves inverted Jenny. And oddly, I knew her many years ago, but maybe...
As did many.
Yeah, so why don't you tell the story and what is happening now, Bob?
Well, in very briefly, the most famous stamp in American philately is the 1918 24-cent inverted Jenny, basically the upside-down airplane. And...
How many of those were the originals were made?
One sheet of 100, which cost $24 back in 1918. It was bought by a man in Washington. The post office realized they'd sold him this error. The color was printed the wrong way, causing the plane to appear upside down. The post office sent inspectors to his house, said, give it back. He said, no.
Yeah, why should he?
Why should he?
They disappeared. He sold it even back then for $20,000.
And this was right after it had been made, basically.
And it was right after it had been made. It was issued in May of 1918.
It's a nice flip.
And yeah. It's gone on to become part of world philatelic history. The post office periodically, but post office, I use that generally, the stamp issuing authority occasionally makes mistakes. I mean, the last major one they made, and it's a roundabout story, in 1962, again, printed a stamp with another color upside down. And the same thing happened. They realized they sold it. They went to the chap's house that bought it and said, okay, give it back. And the guy again said, no.
Yeah.
The post office then said, well, if you're not going to give it back, we're going to go and print more. We're going to go and print a lot more. And what happened was...
You can't fight Big Brother.
No.
Well, you can. The collector turned around and sued the government, saying you can't cover a mistake by just creating more mistakes.
Well, that's what government has been doing for hundreds of years. What are you talking about?
But the judiciary actually agreed, and he was awarded a settlement.
Oh, really?
Yes, he was. And so, for the first time since then, the government is reprinting one of their own mistakes. And in September of this year, there will be a new $2 inverted Jenny, and it's coming out on September 22nd to coincide with the opening of the new Michael Gross Gallery at the Smithsonian.
Wow.
And it's going to be available, six $2 stamps on a little sheetlet. It's going to cost $12. It's going to be enormously popular.
It should be 12, and then it would be $24, the original price.
Well, it would, but the speculation is, of course, is how much is it worth if they print one with a plane flying
right side up?
Now, that would be a good question. All right, we'll go to the phones in a minute. First, we'll take a break, but before we do that, I want to let you know the National Weather Service has issued a tornado warning for northeastern Sullivan County in New York until 2:30 this afternoon. At 2:11, the National Weather Service Doppler radar indicated a severe thunderstorm capable of producing a tornado over northeastern Sullivan County, moving east at 30 miles per hour. The storm capable of producing the tornado will be near rural northeastern Sullivan County. So watch out for that. That's until 2:30. It is a tornado warning for northeastern Sullivan County. Now, when we get back with Bob Scott and David Tripp, we will get to the phone calls. And the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Stamps and coins on Vox Pop. Your calls coming up.
Support for WMC IMC comes from Reform Pilates Studio, Saratoga Springs, teaching Romanus Pilates, providing a fully equipped studio with Gratz apparatus, private and small group classes, reformyourbody.com. Dam Cafe and Deli, Saugerties, New York, serving breakfast and lunch with chef-created soups, salads, vegetarian options, and homemade desserts. Catering services available, thedamcafeanddeli.com. New York Electric Motor Service, Glens Falls, New York, specializing in electrical and mechanical apparatus sales and service, a subsidiary of Applied Dynamics, newyorkelectricmotorservice.com. And Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, offering implant dentistry to replace missing teeth, paduladds.com.
So the lockbox is still open for you, and we hope you make a pledge at WAMC.org. Our fund drive starts, oh my gosh, is it a week from Monday the fund drive starts? Zoinks. Well, everything we get in the lockbox now counts on day one. We're over 103,000 now, so feed the lockbox. We'll shorten the fund drive. Go to WAMC.org and make your secure online pledge. A number to call here for Vox Pop is 800-348-2551, but before we do that, couple from social media, our own producer Patrick Don just joins us. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, how you doing there, guys?
We're doing well. And you, Patrick?
Hey, Patrick.
I'm doing very well. So we've got two quick questions, one from Joe emailing us at voxpop@wamc.org. I ran across a collection of U.S. silver certificates, some singles, some $2 bills. What should be done with these? What might they be worth? Seem to be in very good condition.
Silver certificates, it depends on when they were made, whether they're large size or small size. Basically, anything prior to 1929 would be the large size. Anything post that would, or 28 would be that's a generic date. It's going to depend on condition, who signed them. Those are pretty much the same two things. But if they're small size, they're not going to be worth enormous amounts of money.
Look at the numbers in the corners. That's about the value.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
And then, if they are the big size, they can send us images.
Okay.
All right. Second question, last question, tweeting us at WAMC Vox Pop. Trousfoma, TRASUFOMA tweets, do vintage arcade tokens do well value-wise in the secondary market?
Again, it's going to be when the arcade tokens. There's a token collectors as a whole.
Okay.
Bunch of people.
You guys look down on them?
No.
You sure?
It's interesting stuff. It's
okay.
Really funky stuff.
Okay.
There's a standard catalog by Krauss that's out there. You can get it at the library, mm-hmm. I'm sure. And it's probably about 600 pages thick, but go through it because there are funky things. They're really interesting, particularly the 19th century, and some of them can bring real money.
Okay. Well,
very
Patrick,
nice.
Thank you. And
thank you, gentlemen.
Anybody
pleasure.
Out there can always join in and hit our Vox Pop page, wamc.org/VoxPop, if you want to chime in. Facebook, Twitter, the whole nine yards. Allison in Goshen, you're on. Allison, you're on.
Hi. I'm so glad you're having this program, and I'm really glad to be able to call in. I'm holding my father's stamp collection, which he put together in something like 1925 to late 30s, something like that, of the British Commonwealth nations and, I guess they really weren't nations, most of them.
The Empire, yes. I remember my grandparents talking about it.
Uh-huh, yes, yes, golly. Well, his father grew up in Trinidad and was sent back to Scotland for school, which must have been a real shock, such a contrast. And then he came to this country and married my grandmother and went into the jute trade and spent about half of each year in India. So I think that was, you know, the big interest in the British Commonwealth. Mm. So I'm holding this album of his. I mean, here's Southwest Africa, Strait Settlements, Swaziland, Tanganyika, Tasmania, Tobago, Tongo, and on, all alphabetized with stamps carefully mounted on all these pages.
Right.
No,
go ahead. I mean, firstly, they're remarkably beautiful things because they're mostly multicolored with a lot of greens and reds in them, which I always think is fabulous.
And many triangular stamps.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And there's
very scenic ones, too.
Yes, and they come in. The first question would really be is, are they mostly used or are they mostly unused?
Let's see. I'd say the bulk of them were used and some were not used.
Are any of them on envelopes?
On envelopes, no. It's just stamp.
Okay, it's just regular stamps.
Yeah.
There are various, and because it's 1920s, 1930s, when you say triangular stamps, were they older triangular stamps? Do they have perforations?
You go back to a page that has a triangle stamp.
All right.
They're always tricky.
As we hear the pages turn.
Right.
The first country that actually produced triangular stamps was South Africa. It was the Cape of Good Hope.
Yeah, here's Southwest Africa. No, they're not perforated.
They're not perforated.
Correct.
Ooh, might be something to look at. Did they actually say Cape of Good Hope on them?
No, it's printed on the stamp. It says postage 4 pence South Africa, and there's a figure of a woman, and then stamped on it.
It's a reclining Britannia.
Okay.
Yes.
Striking a pose.
And then stamped on the stamp, it says Southwest Africa, and the other one is, it must be in Dutch.
It says Sweetwest Africa. It's in Afrikaans.
Yes. Afrikaans, yes.
Yes. That's actually a slightly later issue. Do you know they're going to have a certain amount of value, but they're actually, the whole empire produced enormous amounts of postage stamps, and the empire was sort of coming to an end.
Yeah.
The stamp producing facility hadn't dwindled in the slightest. Mm. Mint stamps are going to have a rather large premium over U stamps. There will be, if it's one book and it's a fairly representative collection, you're probably looking at something that's worth a couple of $100.
Okay.
Very happy to talk with you at greater length after the show or to exchange emails.
And I'll get the contact information out there after the next break so that everybody can write it down. So, you know, when you have stamps, even if they're unused, if you put them on a hinge,
yes,
you are somehow limiting, I mean, it's no longer a mint stamp, right?
Well, it's pretty much the same way with coins. When people initially started collecting stamps, you just wanted an example of it. It's a two-dimensional object. You only look at it from one side.
Yeah.
But, of course, when you're a dealer and you've got an awful lot of stamps that don't have hinges on it, then, well, of course, they're far more valuable to have them without a hinge.
It's creating value where none exists.
But seriously, valuable stamps, hinge or not hinged, are still going to be very valuable.
Okay. Robert and Ryan, Beck, you're next. Hello, Robert. Are you there?
Yes. Thank you for taking the call.
You're welcome.
Hello, Robert.
Hello, Robert.
Good afternoon. I've got a very large collection composed of about 20 some odd countries. The U.S., of course, being the most complete, I have all of the what we would call the classic stamps in mint, not a hinged condition.
Is that from the 19th century?
Yes.
Okay.
Starting at about 1900 and just coming back from there.
Okay, so is it one volume? It starts in 1847, or does it start earlier, 1846, 1845?
No, it doesn't go back that far. It starts in about the late 1800s, early 1900s.
Okay, what's the first? Does it have just regular, what I call square stamps, or does it have sort of wider rectangular stamps? And what's the highest denomination of any stamp you have from the 19th century?
I'm not sure what. I don't have the collection open in front of me right now, but let's see, in the Zeppelin collection.
Yes.
I've got that. Stamps in mint, never hinged condition.
There are three of those. There's a green one, a brown one, and a blue one. Or do you have just the little green 50-cent one?
No. I have the three.
Okay, 65, 130. Zeppelin stamps, that's a nice little set. I think even our Ray here has a set
somewhere in his family history. Yes.
And I have the Jamestown set as well, and all of the so-called, like the president's set.
The Prexies.
The Prexies, right.
Which go up to $5.
The effigy or the facial profile of all of the presidents.
Okay, well, to say if you've got just a nice set of Zeppelins, which is if they're never hinged, you're looking at something that's worth between $1,000 and $1,200. Can be a little bit higher, can be a little bit lower. that may be the single best thing that you've got in the collection, but it sounds like you have a collection that's probably worth several thousand.
It has the White Plains souvenir sheet. It has the Pan American exhibition. Basically all of what you would call the classics.
Okay, well, you've certainly got up. You're certainly up at over $2,000. It's that's a very nice collection.
And then of course Canada, the Canadian or the Quebec, I think it's the tricentennial or the bicentennial.
Tricentennial. Or as they like to say, tercentenary.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And then the Queen Victoria set of the one that was minted in Montreal, I think, and the other one in Ottawa.
Yeah, the large queens and the small queens. You definitely have a nice collection. You also seem to know quite a lot about it.
So we'll have you on the show next time as well.
Bob's days are numbered.
Other question to you is, does your organization buy collections such as this?
I would certainly advise, if you wanted to sell it, I would certainly advise and point you in the direction of somebody that would be able to help you. So if you get the information after the show, then I will be more than happy to advise you.
Right, and we don't want to go into that on this program, but we'll certainly give you the contact information for these guys at the 40 break, and you take it from there. Robert, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. It is Vox Pop. Bob Scott handles the stamps. David Tripp handles the coins, and I handled the calls. Let's go to Tom in East Hampton. Tom, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a question about if you don't know anything about coin collecting, how do you get started in it? And also, the mailings that come in the Sunday newspaper for the coin collections that they're selling, if there's any valuable to those.
Okay, well, the first answer is the easiest answer, which is an old saying in my business. Before you buy the coin, buy the book.
Yeah.
It depends on the area you're interested in. Were I to start collecting, I'd ask you, what part of history are you most interested in? Is it American history? Is it ancient history, British history, whatever it is? And then you can start to focus on that area.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a period in history you're interested in, I mean, you've got to remember coins have been made around the world since the 6th century B.C. So you've got a broad span. You've got millennia to think about, and coins exist from all those periods. So those are the first two areas that I would start in. So why don't I just ask you very quickly, what area interests you most?
I guess I would have to think about it. Seeing the ads in the newspaper for, coin collections of the various presidents or what have you.
Right.
It kind of got me thinking, if I should start thinking about collecting coins.
Well, I have a lot of friends at the United States Mint, and this is not to be derogatory, but the material that the government puts out right now and sells you, they're selling at a pretty steep profit. And
mm-hmm.
they make them in what we will call not insubstantial numbers, to be blunt about it. Proof sets are made in the millions upon millions. Mm. If you look at your state's quarters, which people have jingling around in their pockets, some years they made 750 million of those. And so if you just think about supply and demand, those are not the sort of things that are going to go up in value overnight.
Right.
If you collect stuff that has more history to it and was made, even 75 or 80 years ago, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's expensive. We had the inquiry about arcade tokens. It's a fascinating area, and a lot of the stuff is very affordable. You can buy them for, even under $50, but you develop a whole history around them and a story, which can be absolutely fascinating. I remember we had a little token years ago that was for a basically an arcade place.
Oh, I thought that was another token.
It was a museum. It was a museum in the early part of New York. It turns out there were three of them known. I mean, it's fascinating stuff. You do the work, you can find it. But as I said, go to the library, dig through the coin books, see if there's a design that interests you, and start from there.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551. Bob Scott, David Tripp with us, and Helen in Greenfield, Mass. Helen, you're on.
Yes, I wanted to send a coin collection from Massachusetts to Arizona.
Okay.
And I was just wondering what was the best way to do that. And also, like if I'm probably going to fly at some, well, the coins are so heavy, but
right.
if I fly at some point, like if I had, you know, bills in my suit, I mean, I don't understand what, I don't know what's legal, I guess.
Well, you can transport money. I mean, it's
okay.
not against the law. If you want to mail it, I'd probably send it, since you say it's very heavy, I'd send it in multiple packages. And the easiest way to do it, and it's done all the time, registered, insured, United States mail.
Hmm. The post office.
Use the post office. Keep them employed.
Stamp some coins.
Give them a profit. They need it. Exactly.
Okay.
We work together. But that real, it's seriously, years ago when they sent the Hope Diamond, they used U.S. mail, registered, insured mail. And it's done all the time, and there's nothing to worry about.
Okay. Good luck, Ellen.
And do I have to put... I have to put what's in it, though, right?
Well, you have to declare the value. If it's within the country, you don't have to. It's not like you need a customs form to send it to Arizona.
Right.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Not yet. Thank you, Helen. Let's go to Phil in Rensselaerville. Phil.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. This is a call for Bob. I recently found a fairly extensive set of stamps in an elderly relative's cupboard,
mm-hmm.
And they principally are full sheets of stamps, starting with the 1/2 cent stamps and then going up by denominations to 1 cent, 3 cent, 5 cent, 10 cent, and so on. And my question principally is, how do I go about valuing these, or to whom might I speak to determine what the value of something like that might be?
Oh, hello, Phil. First question, are they multicolored?
Yes.
Where would you date them from? Do you think they're from the 50s, 60s?
Oh, they're before that.
So maybe 30s, 40s?
I would think, yes. To be very honest with you, it is something that I have not spent a great deal of time looking at, other than to get it out of the cupboard it was in and get it in my house, where it's the heat is, you know, more regular, and because the outside of the container was starting to get some mold, but the stamps are in these sheets that they're in excellent condition. They're uncirculated, of course, the full sheets.
Well, the first thing you have to do, you mentioned a half cent stamp. By the fact that you're talking about a half cent stamp, you're almost certainly talking about stamp issues which are after the Second World War.
Okay.
It's very easy. You can go down to your public library. The internet is very easy as well. Find the denomination. Find any identifying, if it's a commemorative stamp, it will have something that actually explains, that gives you enough information that you will be able to find a date for that stamp. And
okay.
I'm going to surmise that these are probably going to be after 1950. And
okay.
if they're in pristine condition, you may want to keep them. But in all honesty, they are almost certainly going to be faulted in some way, because if they've just been sitting in a drawer, they're going to have darkened to some degree. The gum might have darkened. They might have suffered a little humidity. If there's even a minor fault with it, add up the face value, and that's basically what they're going to be worth.
That is ridiculous.
Sorry to say. And if you were to sell them, you could probably expect to receive about 60 or 70% of the face value, and that might be on a good day.
Oh, my
and
heavens.
And I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news. But
there
is always a way to get 100%, and that's use them.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, this is why we only have these guys on every couple of years, by the way. They bring everybody down.
But by my calculation, I would need 96 of these to mail a letter today.
Yes, I know.
And, and then there's no room for the address.
Very big envelopes. It'll work out.
30 years ago in Britain.
Thank you very much. Oh, I appreciate it.
Right. Well, that's a real downer, Bob. You know,
no, but you can make some really good-looking envelopes.
Yeah, well, all right, fair enough. Let's get one
if
more.
If you leave the half square inch so that you can actually write the address on it.
So the half penny stamps were still made well into the 1900s in the U.S.?
Into the 1900s. They didn't start making them until
really
the 20th century.
You're kidding me.
Well, there wasn't really a rate. Well, when you think when stamps first started, the rates were 5 cents and 10 cents.
They were expensive.
What's a half cent for?
Well, because we had half cent coins only up until 1857.
Right, you had them then.
We had them from the inception, from 1793 to 1857. We had half-cent coins.
Yeah.
But nobody wanted them, so we stopped making them.
But the key thing here was multicolored. Once you have multicolored...
We did not have multicolored coins.
Well, right. No, you didn't. You may have had multi-metals. You still have multi-metals.
We did have multi-metals.
But multicolored stamps, yes.
So that immediately that tells you, gosh, it's not going to be worth much?
It was also the half, one, two, three, five, ten. It's their complete runs. If you remember back to the 60s and 70s when a new stamp issue came out, there were these huge runs because they had to encompass all the various services and rates that the post office had. So it's a bit of it, and by the use of multicolored stamp printing, which really only came in after the Second World War because it was easy to do and very cheap to do.
Wow.
It's fine. And if Phil is still listening, if he's got values over 50%, 50 cents, and he made the point, you need so many
right.
to mail a letter.
Yeah.
But if you've got 50 cents, dollar stamps, $5 stamps, then you've got something that's actually worth a greater percentage because they're much easier to use.
Fair enough. Hey, Zach, let's take a break now. We'll get back to the calls. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Bob Scott, David Tripp with us. We hit the home stretch coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Unison Arts Center, New Paltz, presenting Hudson Valley's Big Joe Fitz and the Lo-Fis, performing blues and West Coast swing at the 2nd 5th Friday Dance Meetup, May 31st, dance lessons at 7:30, dancing at 8, unisonarts.org. Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing ophthalmology, surgery, and internal medicine services for dogs and cats, now offering laser eye surgery, VESHDeerfield.com. Snow Farm, Williamsburg, a New England craft program offering creative arts workshops taught by master craftspeople for adults and teens, beginners and up, snowfarm.org. And Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors and windows, paint, flooring and more since 1890, with 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont, curtislumber.com.
Bob Scott, David Tripp with us. I'm Ray Graff. It's Vox Pop. Stamps and coins today, 1-800-348-2551. Before we go over to Studio D and Patrick Donjes with some stuff from social media, how do we get in touch with you, David?
Well, via email is one of the easiest ways, and we are very simple. Coin and Stamp Guys, all spelled out, at Berk.com. And if you want to telephone us, Bob...
I think that would be 413-229-9161. And that will actually go to my home, so give us a couple of hours.
Oh, just jeepers creepers. All right. You're a brave man. All right. So that's good. Patrick Donjes stands by in Studio D with some information and missives from the social media.
Yes. We have Sally on Facebook writing in, says, I'm thinking of getting a present, a small framed collection for a friend who's feeling a little down due to suddenly being out of work and is wondering what one could find either related to beer brewing or Manchester United.
All right.
Ah, well, Bob will handle the Man United. I'll handle the beer brewing. We were talking about tokens. There are tons of beer brewing tokens that are out there. Just Google it into eBay and tons will pop up, and they're not expensive.
Okay.
From the Manchester United side, well, probably the most famous manager in English football, retired, age 71.
Yeah. Last week. Yeah.
After 26 years in the business. So I would think anything at ManchesterUnited.com with his face on it might make, although I don't know, giving something to somebody who's just gone out of work to somebody who's just left work.
With millions in their pocket.
All right.
No, I mean, the ManchesterUnited.com will have numerous things that will cheer a person up if, unfortunately, they are afflicted with supporting Manchester United.
There was the shot.
Chelsea report.
There we go.
We've got one more quick one. Lisa wrote in at wamc.org/voxpop, and I don't have her question right in front of me, but she was asking about her collection of coins and wondering if she should sell them. But basically the question was, where is a good place to start for somebody with a collection if they're thinking about selling them?
The first thing to do is make a list of what you have and go to the library and get a copy of the Red Book of the United States Coins, which is a guidebook to United States coins, and just see how many you have. Complete sets are better, and condition. The better the quality, the more the value.
All right, great.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you,
gentlemen. How fast do prices in the Red Book fluctuate? In other words, they print it once a year, right?
They print it once a year.
So if you buy it 7 months after printing, is it going to be fairly accurate?
It's pretty accurate, yeah. I mean, you can always use it as a guide. There are more up-to-date things. If you're dealing with silver and gold coins, the prices are going to bounce around like a yo-yo.
And of course, these books are printed every year. There's a vested interest in the publishers to make sure that some of the values change.
And generally, the biggest changes in values are going to be the bullion-based coins. And also if there's some major rarities like, you know, the 1913 nickel, which is not in last year's edition, it'll be in next year's edition.
Okay. Let's go over to Martha in Beacon. Martha, you're on with Bob Scott and David Tripp.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a coin that thank you for taking my call,
sure,
by the way. I have a coin that I happened upon that I cannot find any information about.
Oh, okay.
It's a 1972 Munich Summer Olympics coin.
Okay.
It appears to not be any denomination. And it looks like it's some carat of gold, but I can't tell what. It's probably not very high if it is.
Then maybe it's not a coin, and maybe it's a medal.
Gold medal?
Gold medal.
Well, it's about the size, well, between the size of a diamond and nickel, and it's less than a millimeter thick. So
it's not a prize medal. We know that.
No. It represents on one side the classical discus thrower.
Right,
and
Myron's great discus thrower, yeah.
Yep, and then it also has the Olympic torch in the background. And in German it says Summer Olympics XX, and I don't know why it says XX.
It's the 20th the Olympiad.
The 20th, okay. So then on the other side it represents like a church or something with two towers, and it says Munich, in German, München, whatever.
Yeah.
1972.
Okay.
And I just cannot find anything. I've looked on eBay. I've looked everywhere.
If it does not have a denomination, the odds are it is a medal and not a coin. And you have our contact information. If you can even photocopy it or just scan it and get it to me, in the interest of time, I will go through it. And then the next time, Ray, you have us back, I will report back on what it is.
That's really interesting. So you think it might be a commemorative edition of a gold medal?
Absolutely.
Well, if you go back that far, I mean, gas stations were giving you things for the Summer Olympics in 70. It was the first really, really, really popularized Olympics, certainly more so than Mexico 68.
Yeah.
All right, Martha, thanks a lot. Good luck. Let us know how it turns out.
Thank you. Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Terrence in Albany. Terrence, you're on.
Hi.
Hi, Terrence.
I was just calling because 7 years ago I had inherited Confederate money, which I'm not sure if there's ever even any value to at all.
There is value to it. It's like everything else we do. It depends on the specifics. As a rule of thumb, you want something from Montgomery.
Alabama.
Why is that?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because they have good notes.
Because they have good notes and good value.
Yeah.
They're early.
Watermelons, yes.
No, watermelons are federal notes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. As a rule of thumb, the condition is going to make a difference. And it also depends. There are lots of copies and museum copies that have been made over the years.
Mm.
So, sorry?
I'm sorry, I was just going to say, some of them are mint, some of them, you know, they're framed, others are tattered and look like they have blood stains on it or something.
Ah,
blood stains
on them. Again, like, it's from a bank that I haven't been to in a while because it's out of state for me, so I wish I had more information about it. But
okay, well, if you can, again, if you can make photocopies of them and send them to us when you get out of state, I'll help you along with them and tell you what you've got.
Terrence, thanks a lot. Now, they made millions and millions of these things.
And they were not backed by anything,
right,
which is why they're effectively worthless.
So it's very similar to modern times.
Very similar to modern times, except with federal banknotes, the government still backs them up and they will take them.
Yeah.
I mean, strictly speaking, you could take a banknote that was made in the middle of the 19th century for $5, if you were dumb enough, you could go out and buy yourself a pack of gum with it.
Yeah.
It has never been demonetized, which in the United States is unique. In Britain, when they changed the design on a £5 note, it's good for about a year.
The Swiss are the best.
And then they won't take them anymore.
What do the Swiss do?
Oh, the Swiss will issue 10,000 franc notes. and they will issue them for a period of 20 years or something. It's something similar to that. And at that point, I mean, and this happens in the 19... has happened in the last 10 years. Yeah. They demonetize them. Yeah. So they don't have any problems.
And you can't trade it in?
Well, you can't.
There is a trade-in value.
There's a trade-in period that people will take them, and then if a store will take. And then after that point, for example, in England, you have to go directly to the Bank of England with your money in hand and take it. And
which doesn't work if you're using them for nefarious purposes.
Exactly.
Right,
that's the whole purpose for demonetization.
Duly noted. The Confederate money, did they have serial numbers as they do our bills?
Some did, but it doesn't really matter.
Okay, let's go to... Uh-oh.
People never throw away money.
Roy in Pittsfield is on. Roy,
you're
on next. Go ahead.
I actually have a question about a 1936 Mercury dime.
Okay.
I had found it some time ago, and it has some strange markings on it. I know typically coins will have a letter... either the date denoting the actual mint to where it was made,
and that would be Denver or San Francisco, yeah.
Well, I have one that has it's a 1936, and it says S underneath, which I assume San Francisco Mint.
Correct.
But on the back, to the bottom right, by the torch on the back of the Mercury dime.
That's a Fasky's, actually.
Oh, sorry. It looks like a torch. There's a W. There appears to be a W.
W, that is the engraver's initials.
Huh.
Oh, okay. I was confused as to why it had two different markings.
No. It was designed by a man, Adolf Weinmann. So you get his monogram, and so that's the W that you're seeing there.
Interesting. All right, okay. Roy.
Quick question, if you would indulge me.
Sure,
happily.
I also have a 1950 $10 bill.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a serial number on it, and it appears that there's a next to the serial number there's a star.
Ah, it's a replacement note, Bob. Bob loves star notes.
All right,
David, I'll let you do it.
Basically, it's a replacement note. They were making the note, they did something wrong with that particular note, and so they reprinted it with the serial number, and to indicate that it's a replacement note, they add a star to the serial number.
And in 1950, that will actually have a small premium.
That
won't
should
it?
Have a small premium, yeah.
If you look through your notes in your pocket today, you may find a bill with a star on it.
But they make more notes and they make more mistakes, and
they
so they're not much worth
many
much.
More notes.
Interesting.
Gotcha. Right. So there's no monetary value.
Oh, there should be a little bit. No, there will
no,
be a kick up
will
for
be good.
Yours. Yep. Yep.
Oh, okay. Well,
right. Thanks
great.
A lot.
Thank you.
Yep. Pleasure. Good luck. We go to Raphael, is this?
Yes. How are you? How are you? Gentlemen.
Hi.
I have a coin. I can't see if it's a 46 or 48. It's a little rubbed out. On one side is a, it looks like Sophie Tucker.
Uh-huh.
On the other side, it says the greatest blintzes maker in America.
I think he's called in before.
He needs a sandwich, doesn't he?
Yes, I think he does.
He does. Nice to hear from you.
It's always nice to have you on the program. Now let's go to Justin in Albany. Justin, you're on.
Astronomy?
Go ahead, Justin.
Hey, how's it going today, guys?
Okay.
Hey, Justin.
Thanks for calling.
My grandfather was in the war, and when he was stationed in Papua New Guinea during the Second War, he met my grandmother, who was a WAC in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
They were both in the Army. But he traveled around both during the war and after the war. He was a salesman for at the time it was the other airplane company maker before Boeing, McDonnell Douglas.
McDonnell
yes.
Douglas.
Yeah.
And he collected everything. I mean, even the pamphlet that they gave the soldiers to. Travel on one of those big boats that they transported soldiers. It was like a safety pamphlet. I mean, the guy saved everything.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that he's got, he has a bunch of different stamps from different parts of the world and currency.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe it's. I can't tell if it's a stamp. It looks like a stamp. Well, he has a bunch of those. Hurry, this is from a soldier. That was one question I had. And another one was from Iran, Mohammad Mazadeh or something like that. I guess he was a prime minister over there.
All right.
And he had a, I think it's a stamp, looked like a little book of stamps and some stuff from Australia, books of stamps from there before the war. And he has some money right before when they were, he went also to Germany and has some currency.
Okay, so
from Germany when Hitler was in charge over there.
Right, so essentially you've basically got the collectings of your grandfather in the period probably just leading up to the Second World War, through the Second World War. You've got sort of money, tickets, tokens, stamps.
Sounds like payment packets too. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, this is an area where the collecting, it has become more popular as a collectible over the last 20 years. And as time moves on, it's going to become better and better. There's a lot of this material coming into the market now because obviously the people that fought in these wars are now coming to the end of their lives. I mean, my father-in-law was involved and he's still very much with us, but he was at the very young end of the scale then and he's in his late 80s now. Not an awful lot of value because one of the things the GIs did and the British soldiers as well is wherever they went, they brought things back and they kept everything. And a lot of it's coming into the market. And it is definitely something to hold on to. It is going to become quite an important collecting category as the years go forward. So I would sit on it if I were you. I think 20 years or so, you're going to be looking at something that's going to have a little bit of value.
All right, Justin, thanks a lot. Let's go over to Denise in Saratoga. Denise, you're on.
Hi, I just had a question on similar to the Justin's question. I have just some coins I got from my aunts in Germany that have the swastika sign on them and stuff. I think they're copper because they're all, you know, that copper tinge they get.
Yep, yep.
But I don't know if they're worth anything. I have probably, I used to have a dozen or so, but I've given them away.
Probably made in the 1930s during the Third Reich.
The great propaganda machine at work.
As it were. The short answer is no. Unless they're specific dates, the values are going to be pretty minimal for the most part.
Yeah.
You probably have the eagle on one side with the swastika, and then whatever the denomination, if it's a one, they sounds like
one
small, beg pardon?
One of them has like a 10 for 10. I think, I can't remember when I lived there, it was not euros, it's, but...
pfennig would be the small denomination. Yeah, 10 pfennig. Yeah. They're minor denominations, but there are scarcer issues of certain dates, which can be worth into the hundreds and maybe close to $1,000 if in really terrific condition.
All right, Denise, thanks a lot. And, of course, like the Confederates, they churned out an awful lot of stuff, stamps and everything else.
The thing to remember is that mostly coins are not rare, with exceptions.
Yeah.
They're made for a purpose, and the only way to make money for the government is to make more and more and more because the government makes a profit.
Yeah.
You know, it costs, let's say, 10 or 15 cents to make a 50-cent piece or a dollar. The rest, that spread between, is money in the government's pocket.
Yeah.
So it pays for them to make more. And in order to make it a circulating medium, they need a lot of them around there.
All right, let's go. We have, I'm sorry, Juan and Socrates, we have about 15, 20 seconds for you to ask this question about the same for the guys to answer. So go ahead.
All right, no problem. It's really an easy one. I just have a collection of flora and fauna of the world stamps from 78 through 81. And I think it's pretty complete. It's like paperwork and what the guy bought and everything. And I'm just trying to figure out if it's something that I should hold on to for my son or just give it to a stamp collector who might appreciate it more than me.
Definitely hold on for it because you couldn't sell it for anything.
Okay. Well, hang on to it. That's a good... Well, thank you very much, and apologize to you for cutting you off. The show is over. One more time, your contact information, gentlemen.
Stamp and Coin Guys, all spelled out, at BerkBERK.com. Mm. And the phone number is...
413-229-9161.
And a reminder, you can continue the conversation on our Vox Pop page, wamc.org/VoxPop. Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com, Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York, custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors, EmpireExhibits.com, Pirates Lakeside Grill at Nassau Lake, a drive-in restaurant featuring local grass-fed beef burgers, smokehouse hot dogs, fish fry, and more. Open Thursday through Sunday. PiratesLakesideGrill.com. And Smith College Museum of Art presenting Collecting Art of Asia, a four-part exhibition celebrating 100 years of Asian art at Smith from traditional to contemporary through May 26th. smith.edu/art museum. All right, that's it. Thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks to Bob Scott and David Tripp for being here. Always love having these guys on the show. And remember, the conversation continues online, wamc.org/voxpop. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your calls answered by Colleen O'Connell, Tom Jobe, and Patrick Donges. With the social media questions today, our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned for a news update.